Welcome to Hindsight. I'm Jennifer Cornwall. In today's program, we go back to the years after World War II and to the period which has become known as the Golden Age of Radio. Variety, quiz shows, serials, you name it. There was something for everyone. And back then, everyone listened. This feature uncovers the forgotten story of the darlings of Australian and British radio in the post-war years, the amazing Piddingtons.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We present the Piddingtons. And here once again is your commentator...
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to today's feature, a tale which is bound to captivate, confound, and delight you listeners, as we examine one of the most unusual and untold stories in Australia's theatrical history, The Amazing Piddingtons. In the years after World War II, husband and wife act Sidney and Leslie Piddington captivated audiences on radio and in the theatre. In 1949, they left Australia to try their luck in the mother country, Britain. Within a matter of months, these two unknowns from the Antipodes would take the nation by storm, transfixing their audiences and creating a wave of controversy in the daily press. The Piddingtons became national celebrities. And what were they famous for? The Piddingtons, dear audience, appeared to be able to read minds. Telepathy, thought transference, extrasensory perception. In a series of BBC broadcasts, the Piddingtons fascinated audiences with their apparent psychic powers. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we shall explore the genesis of the Piddington story and unravel the secret which lay at the core of their fame. Telepathic power or skillful conjuring? For those who believe, no explanation is necessary. For those who do not believe, no explanation is possible. You are the judge.
That old black magic has me in its spell.
Let me introduce you, ladies and gentlemen, to the performers in today's program. The late Sidney Piddington.
I think that all people, even though they don't know it, they've got some degree of extrasensory perception, and that's, if you like, a sixth sense.
Piddington joined up during World War II and spent most of the war in the infamous Changi prison camp. And it was within the squalid and monotonous surrounds of Changi, according to the story, that Piddington developed his telepathic powers and was able to demonstrate his newfound skills to a captive audience. From the amateur was born the consummate showman.
They've had us locked away for such a long, long time. Nobody's as sad as we. Good news now and then, it makes our hopes so high. We think we'll soon be on a spree.
I always had been interested, it was called telepathy more then, as a boy, and when we came back from a working party, I'd been working on the Changi airfield, and we came back one night and I happened to find an old copy of Digest lying in a jail cell, and I picked this up just to read. And there was a story in there by Dr. J.B. Ryan of Duke University, North Carolina in America, and he put forward the theory that we all have extrasensory perception to some degree.
Some findings on the study of extrasensory perception.
Extrasensory perception is a universal property of the mind and not just a rare gift of certain individuals. It is a natural mode of perception and an integral part of mental life. In the summer of 1930, I turned to the task of trying to test humans and began by giving guessing contests to some groups of children in summer camps. During the autumn term following, we used sealed envelope guessing tests on our own college classes with numbers and letters of the alphabet concealed within. This served as the basis for testing ESP and provided some promising results.
You are the judge.
Just because you are supposed to have psychic power.
You should allow your mind to explore the unknown, Claire. Then you wouldn't lack telepathy.
Would you please keep an open mind?
At this stage, our minds were atrophying. We talked ourselves out about what we'd done before the war, what we should have done during the war, and what we might do after war if we got out. And I said to Russell Braddon, who was a great friend of mine, there, why don't we try this? And he said, oh, that's a little muck. So I said, we'll try it. So he said, all right. So we used to sit on the woodpile at night and try these tests, first of all, with colours, just red, white, blue, yellow, green. And then we moved on to these very clear designs. And we found after about 3 months, we were getting something like 60%, 70% result when we were concentrating against a 30% or even less when we were just guessing. And we showed this one night to Osmond Daughtry, who was a major in charge of education and entertainment in Changi. And he said, look, the Japanese have closed the theatre over some disagreement, and he said, this is just what I need to keep the men's minds from atrophying, to get them thinking, so go away and put this into some kind of thought-provoking demonstration, and we can show it to small groups a couple of nights a week.
It is only a paper moon hanging over cardboard sleeve, but it wouldn't be make-believe if you believe in me.
You know, the only thing that came into the camp which we could talk about was the news which we got from the BBC with a secret radio which I ran, and it was my job to listen to the news at midnight from the BBC, and it was too dangerous to write it down. And we found in doing the ESP experiments that it wasn't like a ticker tape or a typewriter sending the message, but you had to create mental pictures. In fact, you had to use visualization. And we found out that by doing this, we had tremendous recall, and it was a tremendous aid to memory.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have the honor of presenting to you one of the most remarkable men in the world. Every day, he commits to memory 50 new facts and remembers every one of them. Facts from history, from scientific books, millions and millions of them. Think of the strain involved by his prodigious feats. I'm referring to his feats of memory.
Oh.
Test him, please.
And Russell and I evolved a plan in Changi to use what we call visualization as a memory aid. So I used to remember 10 or 12 minutes of war news, facts and figures and information each night, which I then had to recall in the morning and relay to the officers and men.
Ladies and gentlemen, ask him your questions and he will answer you fully and freely. Mr. Memory.
How did you visualize facts and figures?
Well, it works on a system of what we call keys and keywords.
Waiting for something to happen has turned all the laughter to tears.
Sid used to say to me, what do you think of this? Do you think it's possible for us to, this ESP? And I said, well, you're a magician, you ought to know. And he says, no, it's nothing to do with magic. He says, I don't want anybody to know that I'm a bit magician.
Maybe Americans, maybe the Chinamen, maybe the Japs will say scram.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the velvet voice of Mr. Slim de Grey, singer and showman. De Grey met Sid Piddington when they were POWs in the Changi prison camp. After the war, Slim de Grey also pursued a career in variety.
Well, I met Sidney Piddington during the war when we were caught in the prison camp. And he impressed me rather because he was a magician. And he went on with his magical tricks. And, of course, we were there for 3.5 years. And he ran out of tricks because he'd done them all. And then he got with Russell Braddon and they picked up a book which is all about ESP. So they became very interested in that and they experimented and talked about it. And they became mind readers, of all things. And, of course, nobody believed it. So they did demonstrations and people listened, people criticised, people were interested. And there he was, a mind reader come magician.
It's just a recall.
You are the judge.
From what I can keep
with an absolute, like a sixth sense.
Yeah,
but
I say,
oh, there's Pido, he's at it again,
Was it as riveting as everyone tells us?
Well, wasn't it, because I was awake up to him,
The night that you told me those little white lies.
Allow me now to introduce you to Mr. Barry Arthur, also a fellow prisoner of war, who spent time in Changi, when he too was part of the concert party.
Yeah, first I saw him was in the concert party. And that's when they schemed it all up, you know. But I couldn't see it going over too well because they're all awake up to it. They'd have been awake up to that in no time. But the public took it. He had a stutter, you know. He had quite a bad stutter. But he overcame that eventually. And when he was doing his magic tricks, of course, he'd be talking and I'd be on stage with him to helping him out what he wanted. And he was good at that.
Was he?
Yeah, he's good at card tricks too. Like all con men. Don't put that on.
The whole thing's nothing but trickery. Now get out.
You are the judge.
So it had quite a remarkable effect in the camp because... and then at the end of the show say, well, there it is, that's extrasensory perception. You may believe it or you may not, but you are the judge. The idea being to create controversy, and it created tremendous controversy in the camp. People argued that it could be a trick, that it wasn't a trick, that they knew it was right. Some said, I have it. And it even got to a stage of people being prepared to gamble their half cup of rice, which was their evening meal, on whether it was a fact or fiction.
You know, he being a magician put a little doubt in a lot of people's minds. Said, well, he's a magician, he must be a trick to this, you see. So Sidor used to finish his act by saying, well, if you believe it, you do, and if you don't, you be the judge.
You are the judge.
So he really never made a positive claim what it was, which was very wise of him, I thought.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Prime Minister of the Commonwealth of Australia, Mr. J.B. Chifley.
Fellow citizens, the war is over. The Japanese government has accepted the terms of surrender.
Something that simply mystifies me.
The two theatres were the Theatre Royal and the Minerva Theatre, and I was rehearsing for the next play that was to go on at the Minerva. And after the play that was currently playing, there was to be a supper party, which was a welcome home to John Wood by Kathleen Robinson. Kathleen Robinson owned that theatre. And he'd been an actor, of course, before he went over. And she knew him, and she wanted to welcome him home. And she asked if he'd like to bring a friend. They'd only been home a week. And he did bring a friend, and that was Sydney. So we met there.
Mrs. Leslie Piddington, née Pope, who began a promising acting career in radio and theatre. She married Sydney Piddington in 1946 and went on to become the famous telepathic wife on stage and radio.
Well, I suppose I was rather intrigued because there was John Wood telling me about it as well and saying, you know, what a wonderful act it had been, and I was just, you know, quite intrigued by it. But I didn't really expect to find myself as part of it at that stage.
And how did Sid tutor you to become part of the act?
Well, I think just by sort of practicing things. I can remember we spent an awful lot of time on Bondi Beach because it was summer, and we just lay on the sand and sort of went ahead. And within about a week, it became quite romantic.
On February the 24th, 1946, the Sunday Telegraph theatre critic, Miss Josephine O'Neill, wrote,
"These telepathy tests convince me. Last Thursday evening, on a veranda in Double Bay, I witnessed messages being passed and received between two people without a word being spoken. 27-year-old ex-POW Sydney Piddington and lovely young actress Leslie Pope conducted their thought transference experiment. Piddington stood by a large blackboard to the left of the veranda and Leslie to the right, where she could not see the board. Piddington passed on to Leslie the names or descriptions of colours and numbers, even the line out of a book, and Leslie received the message either by writing it on a slate or by speaking it. As I watched Sydney Piddington demonstrate his powers with Leslie Pope, well, I was convinced."
Telepathic power or skillful conjuring?
"I'm very sensitive as well as being psychic. Hostility affects me the same as static affects radio reception, so if you'll pardon me, would you please keep an open mind? Would you please keep an open mind?"
"Is funny."
I got a job at TUE in Sydney, and it was then that I met Paul Jacklin, who was the producer-in-chief at TUE. And in discussion, we talked about what happened in Changi, and I told him about the ESP experiments, and he said that would make a very good radio special. And it took us 3 months nearly to work out a really acceptable means of putting a really visual show onto radio and make it credible to the listening audience. We did this by having panel of judges. We had people like Judge Adrian Kalous and Justice Dobie, and they really were the eyes of the audience.
Oh, well, imagination.
Well, I think it evoked a certain amount of interest for a start. Most people thought, oh, what nonsense. It's ridiculous. No such thing. And that was the general atmosphere. And yet there were a few staunch followers who said, isn't he marvellous? Isn't it fantastic? And he shunted TUE from the bottom of the heap up to swept the whole nation off its feet after a broadcast of the Piddington Show. He was almost a topic of conversation wherever you went.
Ladies and gentlemen, former radio presenter, Mr. Howard Craven. Craven was instrumental in giving the Piddingtons their first big break in radio in Australia in 1947.
I met Sid after he came back from the war. He was very keen on magic, doing tricks. And generally speaking, he liked the idea of commanding an audience. He really did.
Telepathy? Or not telepathy. You be the judge. You, the vast radio audience of Australia, will soon hear one of the strangest broadcasts ever attempted. The Piddington Show. Coming soon to 2 years.
The strangest broadcast ever attempted.
Tune in every Thursday night at 8 to 2UE for Piddington.
Away with dull care, the day is set fair. A while is set near to bring us good cheer in winter time or summer time.
The radio was very big, in fact. At that time, I think the Australia's Amateur Hour was the number one show. And after three shows of the Piddington show, knocked everything off the board, so absolutely walked away with the ratings. Caused a minor furor in the business, of course.
That radio special, which started out to be one special, ran for 37 weeks in Sydney, and then Melbourne, to Adelaide and to Brisbane.
And it started a little new fad, if you could call it a fad, about mental telepathy. People used to try it out and experiment themselves, so he put it on the map for a while.
How much do you think was show business and how much do you think was science?
Well, it's a lot of science to do with it. I go for it myself because I'm a romantic and I really believed in it, you know. Because all the time I was with them, I never saw them preparing anything like trickery or mirrors or carbon paper or all the things that magicians do. They just used to sit down and try themselves out.
There are other means of communication. I know Count Alucard will be here tonight without benefit of telephone.
There are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamed of in your philosophy.
You are the judge.
I'm the great Maximus. I'm a mind reader.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We present the Piddington. And here once again as your commentator is Stephen Grant.
Good evening, George.
Piddington Show hits the BBC. London Saturday. Sydney Piddington and Leslie Pope, famous thought transference act, are making British radio history with the first BBC contract given to an Australian radio show. The show will be live in front of an audience.
So we got to London. We kept ringing up people, knocking on doors. Nobody really wanted to see us. It was Peter Finch who we used to see a bit of, because he'd gone over there a bit before us. And he said one day, you should try Alec Hayes. Now, he's sort of prone to liking Australians. Try ringing him up. And we did, and we did go to see Alec Hayes. And we still had a long road to go, because all we wanted to do was make a trial recording. But they didn't accept any sort of previous experience at all. I mean, the 57 episodes we'd done here meant nothing to the BBC at all, because we hadn't done it with them. So eventually we made this trial recording and they accepted it. So we had 30 guineas coming in a couple of weeks' time. Big deal.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We present the Piddington. And here once again as your commentator is Stephen Grenfell.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, both you in the studio and those listening.
Now tonight we present the first of a series of three broadcasts by that very much discussed pair, the Piddingtons. But before we go any further, let me introduce to you the distinguished people who are going to act tonight as your personal witnesses during the next half hour. Miss Adana Romney. Right now, however, let's hear from Sydney Piddington.
Now, this time, I'm going to ask you simply to take the pencil, there's a pad there, and I want you to write down the suit and number of any card in a pack of playing cards on that pad. Don't speak it aloud, just write it down, and let me know when you've done that. I shall just ask for silence, and once again, Leslie will rely entirely upon a telepathic flash, which she will receive from me here. Now, Miss Romney, would you just stand by this microphone here, and I want you to concentrate with me on this.
The transmissibility of an illusion by one person to one or more other persons who are emotionally cohesive is well established.
You are the judge.
Just because you are supposed to have psychic power.
Just a moment.
I'm very sensitive as well as being psychic. Hostility affects me the same as static affects radio reception, so would you please keep an open mind?
Members of the audience would be asked to pick and choose various objects or drawings or songs or anything, really, the lines from a book. And we always had three judges, I think it was three, who were really to represent the audience at home. That was the idea of that. And we always had well-known people because that gave them a certain standing in the community, and also it was good to have names. And they would oversee everything that was going on, and then, of course, the moment would come, there'd be silence, and I'd be blindfolded or have a back turn or something, and I was supposed to get the messages, whatever had been chosen.
Now, Miss Romney, I want you to supply a short sentence, just a very, very short one, such as that the cat is fat or something odd like that, and then I shall attempt to transmit the idea of the whole sentence to Leslie. Right?
Yes. Darling, I love you.
Darling, I love you. Right, now, when the time comes, I want you all to concentrate very earnestly on that sentence, and I shall attempt to get the idea of it across to Leslie.
You started concentrating on a line.
People had said, oh, you can't have long silences on radio, and sometimes I'd be silent for 12 seconds or 15 or longer trying to get something.
Something to do with...
And they did. Those silences held.
With you, Sydney. And me.
I might have even drawn out the silences a bit sometimes, to be truthful.
Somebody talking. It's just an idea of... It's about love. I think it's something like, I love you, dear, a lot.
Can anyone explain the thrill of a kiss? No, no, no.
We had the big stars there because, Dirk Bogarde. We had famous writers too, Compton Mackenzie. We had, the man that was the editor of the State of the New Statesman. We had politicians, people that were very well known, and that gave it, well, you know, glamour, if you like.
In fact, one didn't do it deliberately, but a minor failure or a partial failure seemed to convince people that it wasn't just a set pattern, that there was something really in it. But if you're doing it in public, or if you're doing it on radio or television, then this creates a very great hurdle, because you know you've got to achieve a great percentage of correct results to be convincing.
It didn't matter if I got them a little bit wrong, because, I mean, that would be expected. I couldn't be 100% perfect all the time, but I wanted to get them mostly right.
should stray a million miles away.
Sunday Telegraph, London, August 1949. The Australian thought-reading pair, the Piddingtons, lost on points to crooner Vera Lynn in a battle over airtime at the BBC this week. The Piddingtons, who have had remarkable success with their BBC broadcasts, were cut off in the middle of their show last night so that a pre-recorded programme starring Vera Lynn could go to air on time. Fans of the Piddingtons show kept the BBC switchboard very busy. One switchboard girl remarked,
"We've never seen anything like it."
The inflow of calls were all demanding to know whether or not Mrs. Leslie Piddington had got the answers right. And later in the evening, the BBC was impelled to make a special announcement about the results of the show.
Good evening to you all, both at home and here in the number one Piccadilly studio right in the middle of the West End of London. Well, it's now my sad pleasure to launch the final Piddington broadcast, and this, as you know, the latest series of three. Launch is probably the wrong word, since at least half of it will take place in an airliner. 20,000 feet, we now learn, above the ground, somewhere between here and Bristol. More about that later. On my right, that remarkable young Australian, Sydney Piddington. I'd like to say that Leslie was on my left, but she isn't here. She's, in fact, at this moment, flying on a normal training flight in a BOAC Strata cruiser somewhere over the very foggy West Country, flying at a great height, at a great speed towards somewhere or other.
We thought it would be a bit dull if we always did everything in the studio. And so we used to try and think up exciting places to go to. One was the flying over Bristol while Sid was in London, flying over Bristol in the Strata cruiser.
Now, a large envelope will be taken down into the studio audience, and I want the people who are near it there to put personal possessions into that large envelope. Just something that you'll know when you see it again. And then, when they come back up here, I will take them out and attempt to transmit an impression of each one to Leslie up in the Strata cruiser.
That was an exciting one. We nearly didn't get off the ground for that, and nobody cared because they said, well, you could still do it sitting in the aeroplane. I said, but it's not the same. I've got to be up there. But the airport had been closed because of the bad weather. And then the fog just lifted in time. That was a frightening one because when I arrived, I was called into a room, which is like a boardroom. It had an enormous long table. And round the table, all these men were sitting, and they were all from various newspapers all around England. And they asked me questions, and they weren't terribly friendly because they were wanting me to get uptight and nervous and, you know, they're peculiar people.
Hello from a Boeing Strato cruiser high above England in a somewhat bumpy circumstances. We are here, a lot of press men, and we're under the heat of movie reel cameras, and I need hardly say stewards and stewardesses going about their deft and courteous business. And here is Jean Gordon, a stewardess. What did you do to Mrs. Piddington a few minutes ago?
I searched her very thoroughly in spite of the cold. I made her take off everything. I looked in the padding of her jacket. I looked in her boots, I even looked in her mouth and her hair. And now I have her handbag, so I think you can be sure she's nothing hidden away anywhere on her person.
Well, here we are still rocking about, and back to you, Sydney, in Piccadilly.
Right now, I'm going to take up these articles, and I want you all in the studio to concentrate with me on them as I do. And now, Stephen, will you ask Gilbert to ask my wife to stand by in the Strata cruiser.
Gilbert Harding in the Strata cruiser, will you get Mrs. Pissington, will you get Leslie to stand by right now?
Will you stand by, please? She is now standing by.
Food? Something about food. It's a ration book. Will you go on to the next? Money. It's a pound note.
Telepathic
telepathic power,
or skillful conjuring.
The Daily Express, scientists split on telepathy. One of Oxford University's leading biologists, Professor Alistair Clavering Hardy, shocked his associates this week after announcing that he believes in mental telepathy. Professor Hardy said that he was convinced that the communication of one
no
mind
one
with another
who examines with an unbiased mind
had been
the evidence of the scientific experiments into mental telepathy can reject it. Such a revolutionary discovery should make us keep our minds open to the possibility that there is much more to living things.
You should allow your mind to explore the unknown, Claire. Then you wouldn't laugh at telepathy.
The whole thing's nothing but trickery. Now get out.
There are other means of communication. Oh, please, Kay.
Professor Hardy's comments started a controversy among his fellow scientists, with one saying that it would injure the profession for them to get mixed up in that, quote, black magic stuff.
For Miss Corty's sake, would you please keep an open mind?
And that's, if you like, a sixth sense.
Professor Hardy said that in discussing telepathy, he was not referring to the kinds of thought transference acts, such as the famous Piddington's broadcast on the BBC.
The scientific community weighed in too, I think, didn't they?
Yes, I don't think they were very pleased with us at all. No, no, they thought it shouldn't be done as entertainment and blah, 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 you know. No, I don't think we were popular with it.
Daily Telegraph, Saturday, July the 30th, 1949. No fake. Last night, a Harley Street psychiatrist claimed that the Piddington's telepathy act is not a fake, after attending a BBC broadcast of the show. Dr. Ellis Stungo, Piddington act harmful. The British Journal of Psychical Research has claimed that the Piddingtons have refused an expert test of their thought transference act. The journal contends that the Piddington's performance on the BBC are harmful to the serious study of mental telepathy.
The programme has baffled 15 million listeners.
How did the BBC handle the controversy that the broadcasts provoked?
Oh, I think they were appalled because they didn't want ripples going for anything. And I suppose we were a bit devious not telling them the would-be controversy because we knew the would-be. No, I think they didn't care for it at all. But when it did become the success it became, they decided, oh, well, that's it. Although I dare say some of them in their bowler hats thought it was a bad thing right to the end. Fancy the BBC being involved in controversy.
Mr. Kingsley Martin, then editor of Britain's left-wing journal The New Statesman, was invited to be a judge on one of the BBC's broadcasts of the Piddingtons.
When the BBC rang me up and asked me to be a judge on one of the Piddington shows, I readily agreed. I assumed that the BBC would be offering me a serious opportunity to investigate this fascinating topic. But once I was in the studio, it was clear that nothing of the sort was being attempted. The Piddington's programme was treated as pure entertainment. My impression from talking with them and from watching them at work was that they claim telepathic powers in exactly the same way as a magician and his girl assistant do at a big conjuring show. Thought-reading patter greatly enhances the mystery and adds to the overall effect. I have no doubt that the Piddington show is of this kind. It is not their reputation as entertainers, but the BBC's role as the show's credulous sponsor that, in my opinion, is open to criticism. If the BBC is prepared to fool the public for the public's amusement, then it puts itself in the same category as the music hall.
The newspaper interest became very pronounced. Some papers said it was great entertainment, some papers said it shouldn't be allowed, it was misleading people. The Daily Express ignored the show for 3 weeks and then started to run full pages, really trying to tear every show apart. And this was enormous publicity because it thrived on controversy.
The Daily Mail, London.
Last
November
night on the
8th,
BBC, the Piddingtons, Mr. and Mrs., gave another remarkable demonstration of what they claim is authentic thought transference. The highlight of this demonstration was when Mr. Sidney Piddington, surrounded by judges in the Piccadilly studios of the BBC, sent a message to his wife, who was locked away in London's Bloody Tower.
Thank you very much. Are you there, Leslie Pope?
Yes, I am here, very closely guarded by Captain Dorling and Mr. Ross Williamson. I must say I'm very glad I've got them here with me.
Now, to put you all in the picture, so far a book has been selected...
That was when we'd like to do it in the Tower of London. The BBC were horrified because there was no way you could do a broadcast from there. And anyway, we found somebody who knew the person that... Colonel Khartoum, I think his name was. I've forgotten. I'm not sure. We rang him up and he'd been listening to the broadcast and he rather liked the idea. So he arranged that that's what would happen, and I was locked up in the what was known as the Bloody Tower, because that's where the little princes were murdered and various other people. And it was after that broadcast that the Beef Eaters used to tell tourists that Leslie Piddington was the only one who'd been locked up in that tower and left with a head intact.
At the sound of the gong, I want your complete silence, your sympathy, and your cooperation. Now concentrate on the line while I attempt to transmit it to Leslie.
Something to do... An electrician...
But that was the broadcast where, at the critical moment when I was receiving this line from a book, a tug on the Thames hooted several times. And well, of course, that was it. Everybody said, they paid for a tug. We couldn't have paid for a boat to go on the Serpentine. They paid for a tug to hoot. That was the code. So that was another little loophole we didn't even have to think about. It was there.
Abandoned. I think the whole line is abandoned, as the electricians said they would not be current.
I ask you, Sir Herbert, as judge number three, would you say that that was substantially correct?
Yes. Absolutely.
Thank you.
The Daily Dispatch, Manchester. There's something in mind reading. But how much? The Piddington's Thought Transference Act must have set many of us wondering how much proof there is of the existence of telepathic communication between one mind and another. Author James Langdon.
I don't believe that telepathy can just be turned on like a tap and be at any time 100% successful. For this reason, I can only assume that over the course of time, the Piddingtons have evolved one of the best codes ever used in the entertainment industry.
Turn the lamp down low, I'm beginning to see the light.
Like Sid used to say, you be the judge. He would never claim he was telepathic and he'd never say he wasn't. So I wasn't inquisitive at all. I just kept it to myself and said, well... If it's a trick, it's a trick, and if it isn't, who cares, kind of thing.
What, the showbiz code, you don't ask questions?
No, not really.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is with great pleasure that I present to you the greatest mind-reading and thought transmission act that has ever appeared before the public. I ask you to test the miraculous powers of this marvelous pair, and to see for yourselves the most perfect example of telepathetic communication the world has ever known.
The whole thing's nothing but trickery. Now get out.
There are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamed of in your philosophy.
It is only a paper moon. Hanging over a cardboard sea. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believe in me.
One day, two very clever young people came in to audition, Sidney Piddington and his wife Leslie.
The Piddingtons' BBC producer, the late Ian Messiter.
They called their act the Piddingtons, and it seemed they could read each other's minds. They certainly didn't appear to use any corny, old-fashioned word codes and so on. The Piddingtons was the only programme to make the front page of every national newspaper almost every week in 1949. As an ex-magician myself, I have no intention to this day of giving away what was a damn fine act, carefully planned and painfully executed. We all got on very well, partly because we were roughly the same age, but mostly because we shared a valuable secret.
I didn't think up the diving bell. I don't know who thought of that, but that was another exciting thing. I went down on the diving bell under the water. Exciting, except for me, I was terrified. It wasn't sort of the sea, but it was a factory that made these things, and they had an enormous, like a lake, and I think it was probably only about 20 feet deep, maybe a bit more than that, but that was where I went down in the water. Yes.
What about seeing how our aquatic friends are getting on over at Servington? Are you there, Leslie and Gilbert Harding?
Yes, we're here and all fitted up. Leslie is just preparing to enter the diving bell. And when she's at the bottom of the tank, she's then going to attempt to receive a line of print taken from a book in the studio. Are you ready, ma'am?
Yes, I'm quite ready.
Very well, then. Mr. Mearns, will you take charge, please?
Right you are, Mrs. Piddington. Will you go down the iron ladder, please?
Yes.
And when you're getting in the bell, don't bump your head on the top.
What was it like being a household name in Britain?
I suppose we got used to it, but I don't think I ever really got used to it. But the difference between radio and television is so enormous. You see, we could walk down the street and usually not be recognised. But the minute we had to give our name, everybody knew the Piddingtons.
How are you getting on down there?
All right. Well, my ears are going very peculiar. It's worse than an aeroplane, isn't it?
Yes, hold on the wings, please, surface.
I've got a hanky here somewhere. I think I'll blow my nose.
You can hear, listeners, hear the air escaping from the diving bell here in the tank. You hear it bubbling up.
It's nice and warm, isn't it? It's almost as good as being on Bondi Beach. Have you ever been there?
I'm afraid I've never been, although it sounds very enticing.
Well, this is the next best thing.
Simply mystifies me.
We used to get masses of letters, you know, especially the mad ones. We used to get very peculiar ones. People wanting to find their aunt somewhere or other's brolly, you know. And they would get us mixed up with hypnotists and all sorts of things. But I do remember one of the funny ones was he absolutely serious, this person. He knew exactly how it was done. There was a little green man that sat on Sid's shoulder and would fly over to mine at the right moment and whisper in my ear. Very good imagination. That was one of them. What else? One of them, this is part of the wiring thing, I suppose, one of them thought Sid had a little radio transmitter hidden somewhere, and I had the receiver hidden in a hollow tooth.
I'm the great Maximus.
When I see it, I'll believe it.
But you don't understand. We're a music hall tour. We're just starting on a tour. I'm a mind reader.
Seems sort of creepy when you think of it.
What about the move then to theatre with the Piddingtons in Britain? How did that come about?
Well, that was the reason we did the broadcast to begin with, because that was the thing to market for the theatres, the music halls, because that's where the money was. That's where the work was. And I remember that the first show we did, I think, was down in Swansea, and what's the name? Val Parnell, I think. He came to see us do the show at Swansea, and it was our first week there, and we were horrified when we knew he was out front. However, he offered us a week at the Palladium. That first night was very scary because the Palladium was the really big one, and there was always too much work after that. We'd never ever had a holiday, well, practically never.
The Newcastle Journal, 28 Piddington's May, 1952. Sydney and Leslie Piddington, the Australian couple who have baffled Britain with their famous telepathy act for 3 years, are leaving show business. Sydney Piddington said, "We're going to settle down and make our first home for 4 years. Our secret? That will retire with us."
Thanks for the memory of China's funny walls, transatlantic halls, a weekend at
We'd been doing the show for, what, 7 years, I think, 6 or 7 years. It was very wearying. Quite frankly, I think Sid would have gone on doing it for years. He loved it. But I was getting exhausted. And I wanted to start a family too. I thought that was very important before I got too old. So we announced that we would retire, but we didn't come home. In fact, I didn't get pregnant for another 6 months, I think, but Mark was born in London in 1953. Sid got this offer to come back here and manage the Reader's Digest office in Melbourne. And fortunately, by that time, he wanted to come back too. Otherwise, it would have been very difficult because I found once I'd had the baby, I got homesick. I was terribly homesick after that.
Just because you were supposed to have psychic power.
Just a moment, please.
You didn't buy it that he was telepathic?
No. Would you? It worked out beforehand, you know.
You should allow your mind to explore the unknown, Claire. Then you wouldn't laugh at telepathy.
All people, even though they don't know it, they've got some degree of extrasensory perception, because it's really, if you like, a sixth sense.
The whole thing's nothing but trickery.
You know, I've been in show business for many, many years, and I've never, ever asked a magician how he does a trick. That's his act and his business, and, you know, I don't want to know anyway.
There are more things in heaven and earth than I dreamed of in your philosophy.
Was it real? That's what you're wanting to know, isn't it? You know, I drive my grandsons crazy because they can't bear me not telling them. I simply say what we always said, you be the judge. And I still do, if I'm asked.
Telepathic power or skillful conjuring.
Conjuring. You are the judge.
You've been listening, ladies and gentlemen, to a programme featuring the Piddingtons. Today's performers were the late Sidney Piddington and Mrs. Leslie Hazlitt, Mr. Slim de Grey, Mr. Barry Arthur, and Mr. Howard Craven.
Today's feature was produced by me, Jennifer Cornwall, and Michelle Rayner. Technical production by Judy Rapley. And special thanks to Robin Piddington. Join us for another Hindsight at this time next week on Radio National.